Joining us now, we have the former president of the PGA of America and author of Unfriended, Ted Bishop, comes back into the show. Welcome back, Ted.
Hey, Mark and Mike. Good to be with you guys.
Man, I want to start right off with the Ryder Cup. You know, the Americans win. Now, it seems like the Europeans are overreacting. For me, a glaring omission was not being able to get Russell Knox on the team, playing really good last fall. And, obviously not a European Tour member, but guys like Rory McIlroy saying, hey, we want to get the best guys in this team. What do you do if you're the European side to make sure that no matter who it is, if he's European, you can get him on your team? Do you change the rules to make it happen, or do you have to go with what you got?
Well, I think it's an interesting dilemma, and what a lot of people may not understand is that the European Tour really owns about 90% of what is Ryder Cup Europe. So it's certainly almost a conflict of interest, guys, I think, in some ways for them from an ownership standpoint, to relax their requirements for players who are not at least part-time members of the European Tour, who are earning the points and going through the system in that regard. Now, that being said, I clearly understand the point of, let's try to find the 12 best players that we can find and let's make sure that we're at full strength. And, you gave a great example in Knox and Casey. And I think that as time goes by and purses on the PGA Tour continue to increase and probably distance themselves from the European Tour, it's going to be a tough decision that Ryder Cup Europe is going to have to make.
Yeah, because right now they're just holding their guys over a barrel, trying to encourage them to play as many European Tour events as possible. But, like you say, the discrepancy gets so great. It's a practical matter of making a living, is it not?
Well, it is. And I think, my guess would be, okay, they've only lost one in a row. What happens if they lose in Paris and you have the same type of controversy after that Ryder Cup, then does the tide begin to change? Or if they kind of hold true to the way they've assembled their team in the past and they wind up winning in Paris, which could very well happen, then it kind of shuts the argument off.
When we talk about the American side, obviously a great win. Jim Furyk gets named captain. I like Jim Furyk as a captain. But is somebody like Freddie Couples going to end up kind of getting left out of the mix again? He's done such a great job on the President's Cup side. Why are we not rolling him out sooner as opposed to later, if at all, for the Ryder Cup?
Well, I think that's a great question. I remember very distinctly when I made those phone calls and organized that task force a couple of weeks after the Ryder Cup was over with the Glen Eagles. And I had four members of the task force in Bill Mickelson, Steve Stricker, Tiger Woods, and Davis Love all tell me in my first phone conversation that the next Ryder Cup captain had to be Fred Couples. And so I would have bet everything that I had that based on those conversations, even though I was not in on any of those task force meetings, that that's where this thing was going to go in 2016. And I even thought going into Paris that there was an outside chance that Couples might be in the mix from the standpoint, he did meet the criteria. He had been an assistant captain before that happened at Medina, and he obviously had played on multiple Ryder Cup teams. And I think the way this thing is assembled now, you could have really put some great assistant captains around Fred who would have done a lot of the things that he doesn't really like to do. And it would have complemented probably what his strengths are. And I think his main strength is the rapport that he has with the players and the way he's been able to get his teams to relax that he is captain when he's been involved with the President's Cup. So I've been surprised twice, but I think to your point, I'm not sure that it's ever going to happen now. And I think that, there could be other guys that that would have been Ryder Cup captains before this new system and the task force, you know, kind of set the direction, and they may not be Ryder Cup captains now. And I would point to somebody like David Toms, who, quite honestly, had I not picked Tom Watson to be the 2014 captain, Toms probably would have been the guy. And I remember having a conversation with David, you know, when I called him and told him that Tom was going to be our captain, that, hey, you know, this doesn't mean you're never going to be a Ryder Cup captain. And honestly, I thought he might have been the next pick or two. But you've got Toms, you've got Justin Leonard, you've got Stuart Sink. These are all guys that played multiple Ryder Cups, that won major championships, which was part of the criteria. And I think now, when you look at the lineup that comes up, you know, obviously, Furyk in 18, I still think that Mickelson is going to be the captain in 24 at Bethpage. But it'll be interesting to see. Well, Stricker will certainly be the captain in 2020 at Whistling Straits. So I don't know who it'll be in 22, if it'll be Woods in 22. But I think you can see where I'm going with this. You know, there's guys that you would have certainly bet on 5 or 10 years ago that might have been captains that I don't know where they're at right now.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost the impact that these guys had on the sport when they came into it and flourished, particularly Tiger Woods. It creates there's a bit of a vacuum that some of these guys fall into, and you wonder what, you know, what's going to happen to a Davis Toms or, you know, a David Toms or Justin Leonard. I mean, can they hang around as vice captains? And then what happens after that sort of 2028 mark? Where's the next guy up? I mean, there's not a succession plan, and there are no guarantees, but where do you go after that?
Well, I think you know, Zach Johnson's Zach's a lock to be a captain. I think the other thing that could very well be a possibility is they kind of take the model of what the USGA has done with the Walker Cup, where maybe they name a captain, and if that captain, you know, does a good job, win or lose, he gets the opportunity to captain both the home and away Ryder Cup. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you stop and think about the merit to that, and, you know, it really does make some sense. So I think, like I said, I don't know what's going to happen, you know, in 22, but I know Phil is going to be a captain, and I know he's going to be a captain at Bethpage. And maybe that's where something like that starts. I haven't heard anybody talk about that, and I really hadn't thought about it until we're having this conversation right now. But it's not such a dumb thing. I mean, if you're looking for continuity and you know, you're looking to really you know, maximize maybe your strength from a captain standpoint, I think all these guys, Davis would be the first to admit that he was a better captain the second time than he was the first. And I got to tell you, he was a hell of a captain the first time at Medina. So there's some merit to that logic.
Again, Ted Bishop, the former president of the PGA of America and author of Unfriended, joining us. And, you know, we thought Tiger was going to have a comeback. it got derailed over in Dubai, and it's not looking good right now. It's a shame that he's not going to be able to potentially go out on his terms, isn't it?
Well, it really is. But, you know, if he was an athlete in any other sport, given the level of injuries that he's had, the time away from the game that he's had to suffer through, you know, we just wouldn't even be having this conversation. But because of who he is and what he's accomplished, you know, the talk continues to go on. But I was skeptical to begin with. You know, I wasn't that sold on his performance at the Hero Challenge in December. And I think that given these physical limitations that he evidently has, if in fact that's what it is, I think we've probably seen the last of him. And, you know, I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt and say that, you know, he's being honest with us and he's telling us everything that's wrong with him physically. But I'm not so sure, guys, that there might not be more wrong with him mentally than there is physically. And you just, all you got to do is watch him drive the ball, and just his inconsistency with that club off the tee. I mean, you guys know as well as I do. I mean, it's an easy game if you can drive it well, and it's a very difficult game if you can't. And a lot of people, inside golf the tees think that he's got the yips with his driver, which nobody talks much about yips with the driver, but those can be more severe than the putting yips.
Yeah, I mean, let's just suppose that we've seen the end of the great Tiger in terms of being in contention and winning and everything else. You know, there are so many naysayers in golf. I hate to say it, but are there going to be people out there dumb enough to say this, the way going out on a whimper hurts his legacy?
Oh, there'll be people that will be dumb enough to say it. But, I mean, you're talking to one of them. But no, I think that, you know, I give the guy credit for trying to come back and play. Obviously, he enjoys it. I think he enjoys being around the guys. And, you know, he enjoys the competition. I mean, sadly, I look at him at his age and I say, you know, gee, well, I mean, what is the guy going to do for the rest of his life? I mean, think about it. I mean, you talk about a tough transition from the life that he had to what would be a normal life. I mean, I don't really see him being a commentator on television. I mean, what would he do? I would ask you guys a question.
Yeah. Well, he's not socially sort of competent enough to pull off the commentator thing, but he does look to be having more. He seems oddly happier right now than he has in a very long time. But I guess, see him in the booth.
I guess that's the management company. I mean, that's what the management, you know, the holding company is going to be doing, the TGR, whatever it is. I guess that's going to be.
He's going to be designing clubs and balls.
Yeah, I think, there's still a rumor he's buying TaylorMade, right. So with that company. So, you know, Ted, the other thing I want to throw out there to you is, I mean, the state of the game in terms of the PGA Tour seems like it's in pretty good hands right now. I mean, we got Dustin Johnson killing it. You know, Jordan Spieth won last week going away. You got Jason Day, who's still at the top of his game, provided that he stays healthy. Rory's going to be coming back, I think, in Mexico. Stenson's playing as good as anybody.
Hideki
Matsuyama. I mean, you got still Adam Scott with one of the best swings in golf at number 7 in the world. Justin Thomas rising up, number 8. Garcia winning again at 9. Patrick Reed at 11. And you know, people don't know a whole lot about Alex Noren, but he's won a lot of European Tour events. I mean, those top 11 guys are pretty strong right there.
Well, they are, and, you know, prior to Dustin Johnson winning the Genesis Open, you know, you had 7 straight winners on the PGA Tour that were in their 20s. So, yeah, I agree with that, and I've said that for several years, that if you're golf at the elite level, at the tour level, the game's in great shape. But I still think when you get to the recreational level and the facility level around the country, that things are still pretty tough out there. And, you know, it's we got a long way to go, and it's a fight. It's every, you know, of course, we're getting ready to start a new season here in Indiana, and we just had a tremendous weekend of weather. Actually, played 208 players on the Sunday prior to President's Day, which was a single-day record for the month of February. Mm-hmm. So you optimistically hope that we're off to a good start, and the economy's a little bit better and people are fired up to play, but every golf season, if you're an operator, is like coaching a team, and it doesn't make any difference what you did last year. Your record's 0-0, and there's just seems like a lot of variables that are sometimes out of your control, and I think each and every facility has got to take a lot of time if they have an off season to try to come up with a strategic marketing plan that puts them in a different place than they were a year ago, because things change so quickly.
Yeah, and we're all out here. This, what's part of our job is to continue beating the drum about what a great game it is, and hopefully we can maximize all the good that's going on.
Well, you know, I'll give you a statistic. My facility, we hired a digital marketing firm to come in and try to help us strategically target our different groups of players, and my course is a daily fee semi-private facility that has about 65% of our play based around our daily fee players. But I spent a lot of time reading and studying the millennial patterns. And those are the people that were born between 1984 and 2005, somewhere in that range, I think, 6. And, you know, the scary part about that is if you look at the number of what I would call real golfers in that group of people is about 3.3 million. And that number is about one-third the size of the generation prior to them when they were in that 18-34 year-old age range group. And, you know, and I see that at my facility. I just don't see that many people who are 18 to 34 years of age playing my golf course. And as a family-owned facility who I work with my son-in-law and my daughter, you know, I worry about where the next generation of players are going to come from in 10, 15, 20 years. And I think it's going to be a real fight.
All right, Ted, before we let you go, one quick question. Who's your pick to win the Masters?
You know, I mean, that's a great question, but I tell you what, I think I'm going to pick Jordan Spieth. And, you know, Spieth is, he's played well there. I've been impressed with how well he's played the last several months. I mean, just the way that guy putts, his short game in general, he's my pick.
All right. Well, man, as always, we appreciate you coming on with us, and we'll catch up with you later on in the year.
All right, Mark and Mike, have a great spring. Good talking to you, as always.